So I would come home and I'd work those calls and take those orders on my lunch break. Sometimes my lunch break got extended a little bit longer and longer. Then eventually I was like, I can quit my job. That's an amazing thing when you do a thing and then suddenly it can just fund your life.
Welcome everybody to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 35.
Today, we're delighted to go offsite from our normal interview spot at Diamond Sound Studios, and we are at Drum Supply, interviewing our newest sponsor, Andy Foote, the owner and founder of Drum Supply, of course. Drum Supply has been in business since 1995, as many of you may know, but many of you may not realize that Andy has quite the story to the founding of Drum Supply and him as an entrepreneur to create a business like the one that we see today in its modern form. I know that we were both pretty inspired just hearing him tell us that story.
Yeah, it was massively inspirational. And I really liked getting into his head about how he's approached this business. This dude is, if you put him in a world with no drums, might be a world he'd like a lot less, but he would be doing the same thing in some other way, shape, or form. He's got an entrepreneur's brain. And he's just got a passion for making a thing and making that thing work. You kind of have to have that if you want to have a successful small business. And spoiler alert for all you musicians, all you drummers, you are your own small business. So pay attention.
We'd like to thank our newest Patreon supporters. Big thank you to Don Kozlowski and Jason Marshall. And you too can become a member for just $5 a month. Help support what Nate and I are doing on the podcast. Continue to put out great episodes and content every month. So we thank you for the support.
If you have questions about whether or not you want to become a patron, if you're enjoying the material, if $5 a month isn't going to hurt you, just know that it's incredibly helpful for us because, believe it or not, making this podcast happen does cost us money and has cost us significant money. But we love doing it, so we keep doing it.
Yeah, and it was great seeing everybody at the Music City Drum Show this past weekend. If we missed you and you didn't get a chance to grab some podcast merch, you can still hit us up or go to our website. You can now order online, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com.
Andy, thanks so much for letting us be here. This is so, so cool.
For sure.
This is so rad, yeah. This is our first offsite interview. And we're just thrilled to be here at
Perfect
Drum Supply.
Corner,
we're
yeah.
Here in East Nashville. We're sitting right by all the snare drums. For those watching online, you can
buzz a buzz.
Yeah, you'll probably pick up some of that snare buzz. We couldn't turn them all off.
I couldn't live without that snare buzz, to be honest, in my life. So this is
it's like a kit. Does it sound like a kit?
No.
When doesn't. You turn the wires off. So
yeah.
A drum shop. Same yeah. for a drum shop. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming over.
Yeah, of course. We're here with Andy Foote, the owner, founder of Drum Supply.
Founder.
Yeah, our newest sponsor, of course. We're super thrilled to have you on board. And why don't we jump right into the big news, which is launch of Drum Supply Rehearsal. Tell us about that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, we met the folks from Soundspace at the Drummer's Duel. And a conversation started, and it just turned out just like, hey, it's something that Nashville really needs more of, you know, just rehearsal space, not just for drummers, but it's great to have something geared towards drummers where the gear is provided and taken care of and proper. Right. And we were like, we could just make so many improvements and things over here that could take this in a new direction and benefit us both, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I'm looking at the bass drum head here. I love the slogan, 24/7 create 365. So tell us a little bit more in detail, you know, in terms of affordability and how people would go about booking this space.
Well, there's links on the website at drumsupply.com and all that. But I mean, it's pretty simple. It's just a monthly subscription. It's like $225, I think, and maybe a one-time sign up. And that gets you access to the calendar for 30 days to book 2 to 4 hour blocks 24/7.
Wow.
It's like key code access, kind of like you guys over at Diamond, but it's just a single room. I mean, it's two rooms that you get, you know, as part of the package, but it's a single rental. And people are like, oh, how much per hour? And there's no hourly rate.
Right.
Like it's, you can all you can eat. If you need it for 4 hours, it's $225.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but you could do that, you know, every other day of the week. As soon as you finish your fourth hour or your booking, you can book another. So it leaves the calendar open in a fair way for others to kind of grab spots.
I love that.
Yeah.
Is the booking based on hourly like increments?
No. Or? Well, I mean, you choose a two hour, three hour, or four block.
And then, so do drummers have to bring in their own gear?
You can. Yeah. I mean, if you want to stack the stuff to the side, there's probably room to just set up beside the existing kit, or you can just bring your cymbals. I mean, you're going to bring all your breakables.
Yeah, but there's a kit there set up, right?
We're keeping two kits there so that you can do one-on-one lessons.
Like adapt
You can actually adapt it into like a double bass kit if you wanted to, I guess. In fact, some of the drums were taken over there. You can't see them on camera, but they're right over there, that aged pearl kit, and there's a natural kit.
Yeah.
Some of our drums, we're kind of, it's another thing we're going to feature, our house drums, our Hello brand drums.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can count on the drums to be what you want them to be. No busted head or slack snare wires or whatever, unless the guy right before you demolishes things. But I'm going to be popping in and out to take care of that.
Yeah. Wow. Man, this is so cool. I mean, I remember when you were saying there, you were kind of teasing an announcement, and I honestly had no idea what to expect. And then I was like, 24/7 rehearsal space for drummers. It's like, that really is what Nashville needs. You know, I mean, we have the space over at Diamond, which has been great to us.
And there are a few others, of course, as well. But they all do things slightly differently.
Slightly different, yeah.
And they all seem to be booked or...
Booked or too expensive.
Or not exactly what a given person needs or wants or location or whatever. The only bummer is, like, for us, it's like, I don't know, it's like 9 minutes from the shop. It's not in our shop space here. Mm-hmm. I wish we had more space here, but we are fast outgrowing this space. There's a little space below. This, like, my landlord keeps his tool room down there, and I'm trying to talk him out of that.
Interesting.
So that could be something down there at some point, but I don't know. We'll see. But this is, like, so close, and it's so conveniently located off Wedgwood and 65.
Okay.
That's my next question. Like, as I've started to work over there and set up the space, I can't make it inconvenient for me, if that makes sense. Like, I'll just be driving, doing my normal thing, and I'm like, I find myself like at that exit or near that. You know, it's like, oh, I'll just pop in.
Is that over by the Scouts Barbershop?
Yeah.
It's right over there?
Yeah, they're in the back. And Auclair is back there, right? Cool. The In-Ears guys?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So that's right there. There's the Loading Dot Coffee Shop. There's a pizza place, I think a barbecue place.
So you can go there.
You can
get some coffee, get yourself caffeinated, get your rehearsal on.
Yeah.
Finish up your rehearsal, refuel with some pizza.
And then get a haircut.
Yeah.
And get a haircut.
Scouts is the spot to get your haircut. That's if I do say so
I
myself.
Think there's also another one that I've noticed in there, another haircut
really?
Place.
Hmm. Okay.
There's also a little shared lounge and kitchenette there as well, in a respectful way. It's like shared with the attached studio there that's unrelated.
No kidding.
But you can hang out there. Your bandmates can hang out, you know.
Is there Wi-Fi?
Yeah, there's Wi-Fi. There's a bathroom. Believe it or not, when I've been pitching this to people, one of the questions keeps coming up, is there a bathroom?
Oh, yeah.
You've got a bathroom at Diamond Sound, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Is it always...
It's booked just like the rehearsal rooms
are. Exactly. Yeah.
Not a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a line sometimes.
There was a guy, one of our friends at the shop, who's going to come over and do some video work. I think he was like, he comes from the Brooklyn, New York kind of scene. And he was like talking about a rehearsal space up in New York. And he was like, every time, you know, like dudes will take a leak anywhere, but rehearsal was over. They had no bathroom. So rehearsal was over whenever somebody had to relieve themselves.
Yeah. That's
you got to leave the building.
When you need the bowl, it's time to go. That's it. Yeah. There's no doing that in the yard, unfortunately.
But yeah, we're super happy. I mean, there's already bookings happening, new signups. So that's crazy exciting.
Are you guys running a first time promotion?
Yeah. So right now there's 25% off code. I think it's DRUM25 off your first month. And there's no commitment. You can book a year and save like an extra 20% off that rate.
Yeah.
Or a quarter or half a year for savings. But, and you never know, come by and sweet talk us, and there might even be a VIP code, but you got to come see us and make a purchase.
You got to buy a Hello drum first.
Maybe, or just a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Just come over here and see us, and we'll sign you up, and you might get more than 25% off.
Look at that. You heard it here first, folks.
Look at that. Getting rewarded just for showing up. Remember that. Write that down, in fact.
But we're trying to do a lot of stuff or creative things to tie back the drum shop. Drum Supply to the space, because we want people to love it and be there and go there and be a part of that. But also, you know, hey, come support us over here, you know, in the same way. So I've like plastered the place with all kinds of fun Drum Supply paraphernalia.
Yeah.
And I haven't, this is not live yet, but I'm working on a strategy to put in a 24/7, like almost like honor bar for hi-hat clutches and, you know, like sticks and guitar strings and straps and capos and, you know, all those kind of things. I'm trying to work on a way to like have like a self checkout in the space, mm-hmm. because that's 24/7. You're not doing that here because we close at 5 o'clock. So another perk of being a member is you can go by there once I get this set up. And I think I got a way to do it where it's like a QR code type checkout and you get a code and you can get the key and you can get in there and, you know,
that is really nice
of your buddy.
And no one else
is a member.
That.
And
yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, ultimately, I'd like to have one of those like vending machines, but that's more complicated. Yeah. Is there one at Soundcheck?
Or there is a vending machine at Diamond that has like guitar strings when it works.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Oh my gosh.
This is just going to be.
Forget musical. I mean, get a bag of chips. It could take you a few hours.
They've stolen so much money from me. I hate that vending machine.
To be fair, I think it is fixed now. So thank you, Josh, for doing that.
Yeah,
we're not hating on Diamond.
Well, it's not even the machine isn't Josh's fault either.
Yeah, right.
That's not, he just had it put in there.
Yeah, we don't know the whole bag. I'm sure dealing with vendors is.
Are there drum things in it?
No, there's mostly just strings and strings and drinks in the same compartment, which cracked me up. Hmm. Like, so nice. Keep your strings chilled.
Yeah. But imagine like, you know, cymbal felts, hi-hat clutches. I see those posts on the Nashville Drummers page.
Yeah.
You know, does anybody have?
Oh my God.
And of course all the shops are closed. And so if you're a subscriber or maybe your buddy's a subscriber and they can run by, you know?
Right.
I love that.
That's some pretty clever stuff, man.
We'll see.
So let's jump back because I want to hear about how this place came to be and how you came to be here in Nashville. Are you originally from here?
I'm from Jackson, Tennessee.
Okay.
Back towards West Tennessee, towards Memphis. Mm-hmm. So we spent a lot of time in Memphis growing up. Less time in Nashville, but some. But yeah, I started the shop in Jackson in my grandmother's backyard in a little shed, basically, that my grandfather and I built that I used to live in. It was our rehearsal room. But before all that, I mean, that's where I started the shop and it kind of grew from there. And there's a lot of organic story to that. But I mean, of course, I played prior to that. You got to start somewhere. And that's, I didn't come out of the womb and start a drum shop.
Right.
I'm sure some maybe have. Maybe it's Shane at Portsmouth or something. But.
Well, yeah, I was reading the Not So Modern Drummer article, which has a really cool, basically outlines the history about me. I want to obviously hear it from
you. It's a few years old, but yeah.
I was reading that and it reminded me of like the Steve Jobs, you know, Wozniak kind of. I was curious if you were ever into technology in that way or just had that mind for tinkering.
Right? I mean, I'm a huge Apple nerd.
Okay, there you go.
And Steve Jobs and Woz nerd and all that kind of stuff. I collect Apple vintage computers. My office at home is full of old iMacs and stuff.
You're in good company. My dad was a president of the Mac Club for a while.
What?
Yeah.
For like a region or something?
I don't even remember. I would have to ask
country?
Him. I don't, probably not, but maybe. My dad's a pretty big nerd, and I say that in the most loving way possible and with the utmost respect.
Yeah.
He's a really brilliant guy.
Well, I mean, I started playing in like when I was 12 in, you know, school band.
Yeah.
Just snare drum concert band kind of thing. My parents got this brand new Ludwig Superphonic, like little snare drum, you know, kit, like that UFO case.
The education kit?
Yeah, I guess it's probably,
That kit, yeah.
The sticks would click into a thing. I had one pair of sticks that clicked inside the kit, and you could put your solo and ensemble book in there. But I would lug that thing around the school bus into school, and I would, you know, try to learn. I basically faked my way through, you know, school band. As far as reading music goes, do you guys like, are you guys like, I don't know, you chart stuff out or you're on that
level?
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like I have a pretty typical childhood in terms of percussion education.
Yeah.
So I was doing concert band, orchestra, percussion lessons. I learned to read from an early age.
I tried and I did a little, but I would fake my way through it. Do you chart stuff out?
I don't chart stuff.
Yeah.
I learned how to do that. And actually what happened to me in high school was I did snare. We had like a little drum corps, which was great. Very like Music Forward High School, which was fantastic. At the guy that I did snare with, his name was Andy Davidson, and he could read anything, any chart. And so we had these gnarly drum charts, and I would just listen to him play them and go, okay, that's what all this weird looking notation means. Noted. And then eventually I kind of got it down, but no, I do stuff. I basically play from ear.
I mean, I was just playing snare drum, and then I guess there was a little xylophone and maybe the tubular bells or whatever.
Yep.
But I always wanted to play drum kit. And there was a jazz band as well where it was like, you know, drummers on kit doing jazz and the horns and all this kind of stuff. And I just knew internally, I'd never sat behind a drum set, but I knew that I can do that.
Yeah.
But there was this threshold that I was just like so bummed about. Like, I can't, how do you try out for jazz band when you cannot, like, no way. Like, you can barely read like charts or whatever, like music for snare drum, you know, take that to drum kit. And like, I would just be faking it, and I thought I would fail or whatever. Mm. But I would watch that drummer at performances in the gym or whatever. And of course others. And I would be like, that's cool. And I want to do that, but I don't know how to do that, how to get to be able to do that. Until one day I had my little UFO case with the snare drum in it, and I met this dude that's, we're still friends to this day, on the bus. His name's Mark. He's a guitar player, and everybody was like, he's the guitar guy and you're the drum guy, and you guys should meet. And it was the back, you know, the bad boy sat on the back seat of the bus, and we're back there, and let's make a band. Let's have a band. You got a drum set? No.
That's how it always starts.
Yeah. Right? Guitars and drums. I mean, sometimes back of the bus, bass or whatever. But I was like, I just have the snare drum. And to me, my parents had bought it and paid, you know, made payments on it. And I just thought it was worth $1 million. It was all bright and shiny and chrome and new. And I was like, maybe I could sell this snare drum and get a drum set, because I know it's worth a lot.
So you already had the business mind even as a kid.
I guess, it was starting right there. And of course that didn't happen, but he was like, hey, my little brother tried to play drums and he quit. We've got his old kit in the basement.
Oh, perfect.
So I remember the day my grandparents dropped me off at his house, and I walked in. I had my snare. I brought my snare to my first gig. I never sat behind a drum set. Put my snare on the snare stand. It was an old Pearl kit, like an export kit.
Yep.
And I don't remember, like, nobody taught me how to, you know, cross hand or like any. I just started playing. Like, he started playing guitar, you know, and I just started playing drums.
Yeah.
And I felt like, I mean, I probably sounded really horrible, but I felt like I felt like I'm doing it. Right. I'm playing drums.
You were at least close enough that your ear, as developed as it was at that time, was like, this is acceptable.
Yeah. I mean, foot, hands, you know, on it, like I was doing it. And it was just like, wow. But I still at home only had my kit. I mean, my snare kit, you know?
Right.
So I just aspired to have a kit. There's one at his house, and he would assign us, like, he kind of led things, 'cause he was the guitar guy. He would assign us, like, you know, next week we're going to practice, we're going to learn these songs and come back, and we're going to play these Motley Crue songs or Thin Lizzy or whatever it was.
Love it.
It was like learn this whole album sometimes. And I would like go home and I would try and do it, and just as best I could, I would come back, I'd be ready to do it, but he would never learn his parts. He was always just like, he couldn't get past like shopping for distortion pedals or something.
Classic guitarist. Yeah.
So he's dishing out homework and then not doing it?
Exactly.
What a dick.
But it worked. Somehow it worked. I mean, it worked for me. It gave me some discipline for like, okay, I've been told to do this thing, to learn this, and I tried and I did it and I felt like I did it. And, you know, I don't know. I guess I was a little frustrated when I would come back and he couldn't play along.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'm ready to play. Plus, push play on the cassette.
That's like when you go to rehearsal, you're, you know, as a drummer, you're on it, right? You're prepared. And the rest of the band is like learning the songs like, during the rehearsal.
Yeah, you're like, hey, this is not the time for that. This is the time to run the songs and iron things.
Yeah,
out.
You're there for
not
like
to learn
a few
them.
Hours. Yeah. It's not ideal.
No, no, that's not the way.
Well, I mean, I eventually did get a kit. How did I end up getting a kit? I kept that snare drum. Oh, I got a kit for like my 12th birthday.
Did you come from a musical family?
No, nobody else played music. I mean, they were into music. Yeah. My dad had all these like old early rock and roll records, like Little Richard and Fats Domino. And,
cool.
You know, Johnny Rivers, different ones. And he was always pointing out, because he knew, I started playing with like bouncy pencil erasers on cardboard boxes when I was, you know, a child.
As we all do.
Yeah. And it was like, you can get that rebound. Brr,
oh,
you know?
Yeah.
And then I got a crappy, you know, like, I think it said Diamond Rock on the front head of the kick drum. Like, it was made out of metal, like shells, like a little child's kit.
Yeah, right.
And I beat the heck out of that thing. I think our neighbor, like, kicked in the bass drum one day. And so it had no sound anymore.
Like out of joy or hate?
I think it was probably like, you're making too much noise.
Yeah. Wow. I would imagine.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just started on pencil boxes and stuff, and then got a kid's kit and then all the high school stuff. And then I did actually get my first kit was a Ludwig Vista light kit.
Wow.
It was like black, see-through.
Yeah.
Concert toms, though. It was like 10, 12, 13, 14 up top, like on two toms here, two toms there. One floor tom 22, and then my Superphonic came with some old Zildjian cymbals, some old 70s cymbals.
It's a great first kit.
It was a great kit.
Fantastic first kit.
And I would put on my old headphone, hand headphones with the curly cord, and play along with like Van Halen, Jump, and all that. My toms, it was like perfect for that.
I love it. Yeah, that concert tom sound, man. I feel for anybody that has never experienced playing.
It was fun, but it was like I don't know what year that would have been, but that was a 70s drum kit, and it was not the 70s. Like I had last year's model kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I was all, it never sounded, it, besides the Jump album, really, it never sounded like everybody else's drums. I always wanted it to sound like, you know, people had, it was like definitely a time when there were like giant power, wood shells and power toms, like super deep, you know, 80s toms.
So were these single-headed toms on that first Ludwig kit?
Yeah.
They were, because that's sort of how you started tinkering.
Yeah.
You eventually converted that to...
Oh, yeah. You saw that in that article. Yeah.
I did my research.
Well, I did not eventually. I always aspired to, but I do credit that situation of like, I have these drums. They're great, but they're not what I want them to be. How do I make them what I want them to be?
Wow. Mm.
And I knew that like, well, everybody else's drums have bottom heads. You know, how do you get bottom heads on a vintage, it was slightly vintage that time, but an acrylic kit with no bottom head. Like, how do you drill acrylic is what my little child brain was like trying to figure out. And how, it just seemed like I would touch it and it would just shatter. In my mind, that's what I thought would happen.
So yeah. how did you go about researching that? Because I mean, for me,
there were no websites. It was just, there's no internet. Books about that. It was, I would talk to people. I would make phone calls to drum shops and people. Anytime it would come up in my universe, I would be like, how do you drill a plastic drum shell? Because I didn't know there. It was just plastic to me.
Right.
Now you just put that in a chat GPT and it comes out, or Siri.
We take them toward the back of our shop and we do the job.
Exactly. But, drumsupply.com.
But I was, I would always tank. I was a tinkerer, and I'm a believer that drummers are sort of tinkerers by nature. There's so many things to assemble and take apart and set up and adjust. I would take all the hardware off the shells, pack them out with cotton, oil things and lube things and fix things and replace screws, custom cut my own gaskets, because it was also at a time when, like, I think it was Pearl started coming out with drums with gaskets under the lugs, mm-hmm. with like, you know, with like a little black shadow. Nobody did that. You think of drums from the, I don't know, 70s mm-hmm. and back, like they were just hardware on a shell.
Right.
But I wanted, it was a modern current trendy thing to have gaskets and lugs. And so I just like cut them out of whatever, like I pull the front of a notebook off and so use the plastic to cut gaskets or whatever. So I was always modding that in fun ways. I would go to the auto store and get pinstriping, like rolls of pinstriping that would go down the side of your like Chevy. I would pinstripe the bottom edges where there were no heads. I would pinstripe around there with this color, and I would change the colors. It was red for a while, and then I was into turquoise.
Are these I'm just trying to picture this community that you're in. And so this is in Jackson.
This is in Jackson. So it was just like, you know, school band, church, you know.
Did your parents have to drive you around for these different
sometimes. And it was projects? Mostly my my grandparents were the ones that sort of shuttled us around. Mm-hmm. But that drum kit took up like my whole bedroom.
Yeah.
It was in my bedroom. Wow. And so I basically rolled out of bed and be at my throne. My parents were so supportive that like they never complained. I was back in my bedroom, just probably just like so loud playing this kit in this tiny little house. And not once were they like, turn it down or anything like that. So, you don't think about that at the time, but I'm sure neighbors didn't complain, you know?
Just the one that bashed in the bass drum.
Yeah, that was, he probably moved out of the neighborhood by that time. But yeah, so I had that kit, but I always wanted that wood kit. I always wanted to double-hand it. And somehow I got attached to Gretsch. It was probably some ad in Modern Drummer or something.
Yeah.
You start to flip gear, you're always going to need to sell the last thing before you, to fund the next thing. And at that time, there was like no Craigslist or internet or anything like that. There was this, basically our Bible, our gear Bible at the time was this newspaper that published out of Nashville. We were in Jackson, called the Trading Post or the Trader's Post or something like that. Uh-huh. And it was just like a classified ads with like people selling and buying and selling. Wow. And so we would just like comb through these pages and pages and get the new issue of the Trader's Post. You could get it mailed to you wherever you lived. And there was a guy selling, it was like a walnut finished Gretsch kit that was like, I don't know, something like $1,600 or we'll trade for Roland electronic kit.
Hmm.
Flipped over on the back of that same page, somebody was selling a Roland electronic kit for $600. And I was like, a light bulb went off and another little cog in the wheels of a business operation clicked into place. And I just like called that guy that's selling the e-kit. I was like, I will meet you. I'll drive 3 hours. I don't have a car, but Mark, my buddy, guitar player guy, will drive us to Nashville. Met him in the Shoney's parking lot by the stadium. Yeah. It was the Shoney's at that time. Mm-hmm. Timed it out perfectly so that like they didn't overlap because I didn't want those guys connecting.
Right.
You know, I was like, I'll meet you at 2 and then we'll get a burger and I'll meet the next guy at 4 or something. But bought the e-kit for $600, traded it, you know, 2 hours later to the guy with the Gretsch kit that was for like a third of the price.
That is incredible. What a story. Yeah.
And how old were you?
I was probably
teenager?
14, 13, 14.
That's amazing.
And so I had a real drum kit. And it was an awesome square badge walnut Gretsch kit that I had until a few years ago. I think at one point I had to sell it to pay the rent.
Yeah.
One of those kind of things. I started collecting more and more Gretsch kits and stuff after that.
Wow.
This may sound like more normal behavior in today's day, right? With the internet and like it's so easy to do that stuff now. Like,
oh, yeah.
Facebook Marketplace and Reverb. You could buy stuff and sell stuff all the time. That's like the norm. But back then, I mean, did you feel like almost like rebellious? Kind of like you're meeting people, you're kind of.
Not really. It didn't feel like rebellion. It felt just like something, like it felt right. An opportunity that you had always been wanting and was just placed right before you. And you're just like, wow, you can just do this. I mean, now you can just click a thing or DM somebody, but at that time, there's a lot more effort that went into it, but it was just like, now I have this kit. And, you know, you get to, you start to be a gear nerd and you're like, you know, you can't use that as a crutch. And I'm sure that's still a thing. I'm a little disconnected from, you know, what you guys are out there playing and, you know, you've got to have your talent. But you also need some good gear, you know, and maintained gear and stuff like that. But you can't, I've definitely seen it where people are too attached to gear and they think that's, you know, the next better piece or the upgraded thing is like going to make them somehow achieve more.
Yeah. There's a balance for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, it did make me a better drummer to have that Gretsch kit, but it was more inspiring to play.
Yeah. Sounds it for sure.
And then I was able to sell my Vistalite kit, never had to drill it. and then we were off to the races. We were a band and started playing and stuff. And then, you know, that cycled through and I got into CCM bands, contemporary Christian bands and stuff at the time, a different lifetime ago. Yeah. That's not my world today. But I think churches are for a lot of kids and music and stuff like that. It's a great starting point for, you know, being introduced to music and playing and musicians and collaboration and all that.
And performing, playing in front of other people.
Yeah.
That was absolutely massive.
Yeah,
I
really?
Know. I totally agree with you. I mean, that was I would credit being comfortable playing in front of human beings to years of doing that. Years of playing in church.
Where was this?
This was back in Redding, California.
Okay, wow.
And just, you know, show up Sunday morning. Okay, here are the songs. Great, cool. Here we go.
Well, I mean, I went through, you know, Southern Baptist and then like Pentecostal, which is like really heavily like crazy music based.
Yeah.
But it turns into for us at that point, I mean, I ended up sort of getting out of it because it felt like as a musician on stage in a Pentecostal setting, it felt like we were sort of driving.
Hmm.
People would say that like the Lord was, you know, going through us through whatever, but it felt to me like I could like double time it and then the audience would react differently and they would be like, God's doing this.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I just started playing double time.
Yeah. I messed with your head. Yeah. I am. Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah. I believe it probably requires a lot of wisdom to determine the difference between those things.
But it was good. I mean, that got us in front of people, and we started playing more and more, and I was touring, and I was still working like a full-time job. I used to run like produce markets for every independent grocery store in Jackson.
Oh, wow.
So I was in there like, you know, 4 a.m. in the morning, putting out the apples and the oranges and turning on the sprinklers, and that paid the bills and bought gear. But then when you start playing and touring and like trying to do like studio stuff and, you know, being what you are as a musician in the 90s, it would have been, at some point it kind of flipped from, like, I don't know what it was. So my grandparents, I basically lived with my grandparents in that little room in the back where we had band practice.
Yeah. And
they started to, you know, their health started to decline. And so I had to like sort of just make a decision. Like, I can't do the road thing anymore at that time. I need to stay home and like kind of take care of my grandparents. And I had started like tinkering with making drums, you know, my sort of like tinkering with my kit had sort of started to turn into constructing, you know, different things. Mm-hmm. At that time there were no sources for the parts.
Yeah.
All the shells and all that kind of stuff. Like, there was really no go-to for those kind of things. And I went to NAMM shows and just made phone calls. There's this thing called it was basically the internet of the time when it comes to business, this thing called the Thomas Registry. You can go to the library and you get these giant books that are like 6 inches thick that have to do with different industries. And you just look up like suppliers of things.
Hmm.
You know, there was a time when I started making, I tried to make cymbal polish, and I needed containers like spray bottles and stuff to put it into, and I had to find suppliers of like those kind of things.
Wow.
That feels a thing like that. It's funny because we do have access to more things, generally speaking, but there's also such a mess of just noise out there. It feels something like, you said it's called the Thomas Registry. Something like that feels like some form of arcane knowledge. Like, yeah, there's this... Yeah, you can get kind of generally more stuff. Like, I can look up who's dating Kim Kardashian right now. Like, but I feel like things like that might not be as accessible today as we think.
I mean, it's cool because you could,
That's a good point.
I mean, it's like written in not stone, but in ink in a published thing that came out once a year, you know, who sells these things
right. And
here's how to contact them.
I really like that. I don't want to dig through 15 websites to try to find the thing I'm looking for. I'm like, okay, where am I going? This is the thing I want. Great. Here's a list of 20 suppliers. Great. Here's how to contact them. Call.
I just start making phone calls. Hey, send samples, you know, and then you have to have like sort of pretend that you're a business.
Yeah.
You know, because you're talking to a business.
Right.
So the cymbal polish thing, I probably sold like 100 bottles of cymbal polish or something.
It's funny. You said pretend you're a business. I'm like,
that's how you start.
you were, but like, yeah, that's true. But all at the same time, you were. At the moment you decided to do that, you did become.
I tried to make, do you remember the Remo putty pad? Where it was like this silly putty kind of thing.
Absolutely.
I basically invented that before they did.
No kidding.
There was some, and you find, I just start going through the Thomas Registry and finding it's like these rubber putty place I would call and get samples. And they basically sent me a thing and I was like, yeah, squish it out, put it on the table, start as rebound. Like that's like a practice pad. I basically invented that, but like nobody, that's a hard thing to sell if you're not Remo.
Yeah. You know? And there's no internet back then. So
yeah.
It's like you got the coolest idea in your bedroom, but who's going to know about
exactly.
it? Exactly.
Right. So I'm like feeling around, like there's a business sense in there somewhere.
Yeah. At this time, were you building gear for any friends or was it just for yourself at that time?
It was for me. I was just kind of feeling it out and it just start to just like wheels just start to turn and things start to click. And it turns out that, okay, so my fifth grade band instructor was super instrumental in, you know, when I was in concert band and all that. His wife was the art teacher. He was the music instructor. And those are the only two classes or topics in school that I had any interest in. So they were my favorite, like power couple before power couple was a term.
Yeah.
But he had super inspired me, got me into music, playing drums, all that. He leaves in like sixth grade. I was in fifth band with him, fifth grade and sixth grade. He leaves to go to med school. So he's gone. I go to a different school, get in the band with Mark, do all those kind of things, tour and all that kind of stuff. He re-enters my world all these years later. It was probably 91 or 92. And he has gone through med school. My fifth grade band instructor is now a doctor, like an MD at the emergency room at the clinic in Jackson, has fun money apparently, still has some musical tendencies. He's putting in a studio in his home. Mm-hmm. He's long since left his art teacher wife, and he's now a playboy. He needs a drum kit, and he finds out that I'm making some drums and stuff, and he commissions me to make all the snare drums or a bunch of snare drums for his studio.
Wow.
I'd never done that.
That was like the first legit project you had?
Yeah, and it was like one of those things where you're just like thrown into the deep end.
You've heard of Drum Supply, but you gotta see their shop. It's a drum shop experience like no other. They're packed with all the gear a working drummer needs, and so many parts, noise toys, and accessories. It's a toy store. Curated cymbals, kits, and snares. The hands-on percussion room is nuts, and their custom shop work is fast and affordable. Andy and the guys know their stuff, and they're ready to help. And the big news, they just launched Drum Supply Rehearsal, a 24/7 rehearsal space for drummers. Learn more and grab discount codes at drumsupply.com.
And so I had sourced shells and wrap materials and hardware and knowledge of how to do the woodwork and all that kind of stuff. And somehow I'm like, yeah, you're going to pay me a bunch of money, all this money to make like six snare drums. You know, it was like just one of every like, you know, piccolo, 6-inch and 8-inch maple wood, like all the different like tones and textures that you would want in a studio. I don't remember what he paid me. I think I even built the like rack that housed them all and charged him for that.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Like I probably made a few $1,000s, which was a lot of money to me at the time, but showed me like I can make a thing and sell this thing and it's drums and it's something cool and somebody will buy it. That I respect even like that was instrumental in my musical history.
Yeah.
So I did that, made those drums and somehow I was like, I had this sense that like, making the drums is cool. There were a few people doing that around at that time. Joe Montaneri, actually my craftsman here, Rob Campa, he was one of the early drum builders as well. And I was nowhere near their level.
Yeah.
But
was Craviato at that time?
He wasn't. It was probably Solid Percussion before that. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Solid? Drums are super sought after now. It's like pre-Craviato.
Yeah.
It was the guy, the drummer from Huey Lewis and the News.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't realize that was him.
I forget his name. Bill something maybe. And Johnny was probably in the background making the shells. He was probably back there before it was Craviato. And there's probably some money deals that like turn Solid drums into...
American Psycho just triggered in my mind. Really? It's a movie I've seen, Nate.
Wow. I don't know if you know this, Andy, but Dan has seen like 5 movies in his entire life.
Not as many as...
What's American Psycho normal. Triggering?
He's like about to kill the next victims, right? And he's walking through the apartment.
Oh yeah,
and he's got. I think he puts the record on.
Huey Lewis. I was wondering because I killed anybody.
Yeah, I'm like Huey Lewis always triggers American Psycho.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, but Craviato was somewhere in the background, smoldering, starting to become a thing. I wasn't at that level of craftsmanship, but I somehow could just sense that like there was a business model here. And internally, organically, it turned into, I'm not selling drums. I'm going to sell the parts for other people to make drums, you know? Mm. And so, because I had sourced all those things for myself, nobody else had done that. There was like one shop maybe in New York selling a little bit of a catalog of that stuff. But I took photos, made a catalog. It was basically a postcard with photos wrapped in a flyer.
Yeah. Without like a roadmap, you know, it sounds like you're going through so much work and dedication to find these parts. You're looking up this like physical, like phone book. How did you, and you finally get the parts, what gave you the green light for like quality of like, okay, this is usable or like I need to find other parts?
I don't know. Just used it based on the gear that I had, I guess. Like the Ludwig kit and the Gretsch kit and other kits at stores and stuff.
Yeah. If things sounded like they should.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could just... I don't know. When I put them all together and they worked and somebody wanted to pay me for it, I was like, I guess that's good.
Yeah.
I guess I made something good.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, someone wants this. Oh, great.
But I put a ad in the back of Modern Drummer. Not So Modern. I did advertise in Not So Modern Drummer, which is the vintage mag back then. Yeah. But I put an ad in the back of Modern Drummer. I set up an 800 number. which was the toll-free that you had to have if you were any kind of like mail. It was like internet business today back then would be considered like a mail order business.
Yeah.
You know, you would call an 800 number and ask questions and give them a credit card and they would ship you things. And wow. I was wanting to be that guy that
right.
you would call.
Yeah.
So somehow I figured out how to get 1-800-NEW-DRUM, which spelled out because you had to have like a vanity number.
Oh my gosh.
And serendipitously, if I can say that word, it turns out that some other music store previously had that number. Yeah. So I started getting their calls.
No.
Like
kidding.
I don't know if they let it lapse or if they had gone out of business.
Forward or?
No, it was like, it was my number now. Yeah, it previously was their number.
Right, right.
And so it was called Rosewood Music. I would be like Drum Supply House when they would call. And they would be like, this is Rosewood Music. And I got enough of those calls that I figured it out that this number used to belong to Rosewood Music.
Yeah. No, it's not. But hey,
exactly.
I've got drums.
So Drum Supply House, when was that name born?
First, right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think I just used my personal name. Like, I think it was called, my first name is Alexander. I think it was Alexander Foot Drum Supply.
Yeah.
Was what was on my little cymbal polish
yep.
in this old font kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then somehow that, I dropped my name, kept Drum Supply, and somehow House got added, Drum Supply House. Yeah, so I started getting calls, and people started responding to my ad in Modern Drummer. Yeah, Modern Drummer. And I would send them the little catalog and the pictures of the postcard of the drums, parts and stuff. And people started placing orders. And like, it's a magical thing when you're just a dude and you have this thing, it's like, you know, when you're selling lemonade or drum parts and yeah. then people like start to line up for it.
It's that the whole notion of if you build it, people, yeah. they will come.
Yeah.
But I just have to say that
this
story is getting me, it's making me really happy to hear how this has all come together. And we can relate to this so much because it's starting to feel like that with this podcast.
Really? Yeah.
Very much. I mean, you're our fourth sponsor.
Oh, wow.
And we're like, this is awesome. You imagine that you do something, you make something, and you do it well enough that someone's like, hey, I'm interested in that thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
And being a part of that in some way. Like, this is just people, if you have something in your brain that you've always wanted to do, but you're like, I don't know if that anyone will ever care.
Yeah, just try.
Just try it.
Yeah.
Just try it.
Absolutely.
Gosh.
And then the other thing that happened in that same, probably within a month or two, I don't know if you've ever heard of Stuart McDonald. It's a guitar making catalog.
Mm-hmm. No.
If you're ever, all guitar luthiers or whatever would know it, but it's known as Stumac for short. They were like the big mega supplier for guitar parts for guys that worked on the guitars. Yeah. They dipped their toe in the drum making world. They put out one catalog of drum parts at that time. And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to do this thing that nobody's doing. And then these big guys with money and a budget suddenly are like, have the same idea and the same timing. And they print a full color catalog and market it in a big money way. I'm like, oh, this sucks. But they were guitar guys and they didn't know what they were doing when it comes to drums. They had one catalog and they called it quits.
Wow.
So I called those guys, got to talk to some of their bigwigs, made a deal to buy all their remaining inventory.
Oh my God.
And so suddenly I had like, surplus, I had stuff to sell and I folded that into what I was doing, made a deal for them too. I was like, I'm going to buy all this stuff, but you got to like, when people call, because your catalog's in thousands of mailboxes, you know, right now, give them my number. And they did. And so people would be like, hey, Stuart McDonald gave us your phone number. And so I got Rosewood Music coming in. I got my Modern Drummer ad coming in and now Stu Mac callers come in. And I'm still working a full-time job. I'm still like polishing the apples. I mean, a kid. I'm trying to play music. I can't tour anymore. I got to take care of my grandparents.
Yeah.
I'm still working a full-time like grocery store job. And so I would come home. It was an innovative thing for me to get voicemail on my business number. Cause like I'm at the produce market working, you know, and people are calling, my phone's ringing, but like it just goes to voicemail. I'll come home on my lunch hour, check these voicemails, give them calls back, write up orders, take a credit card, process it. And this is also when like the credit card processors were like that ka-chink thing where you had to like imprint and you had to make like carbon copies of to do a transaction and type it into this machine that spit out this dot matrix.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it
was a chore. It wasn't like nobody's Venmoing whatever.
Yeah, right.
Or Square or whatever. But so I would come home and I'd work those calls and take those orders on my lunch break. Sometimes my lunch break got extended a little bit longer and longer. Then eventually I was like, I can quit my job. That's an amazing thing when you do a thing and then suddenly it can just fund your life and you're not like getting rich, but you don't have to work for somebody else.
Yeah. I mean, that comes up with so many drummers, the guests that we've had on this podcast, you know, that a lot of them move here. They, you know, you kind of have to have that 9 to 5 or that job to keep you afloat. And then if it's, you know, if it's the goal of that drummer to be full time, I mean, same, you have the same story, right, Nate?
Yeah.
I mean, just that moment where you realize like this can now support me and that's, wait, what a feeling, right?
I was not on the road anymore, but we had a little gig at a local, like, I don't know, convention center. And it was a big gig for us, for me as a drummer. I got to play on a giant stage in a room. And I remember I got my first $500 order. Oh. Like, right before that, I was just in heaven.
You had to be
floating. I was like, I just made $500 and I'm playing the biggest room I've ever played. And it feels like I'm actually in business.
Yeah. Man, the resourcefulness, is, as I'm hearing the story, it's just, yeah, it's inspiring. I mean, it's crazy.
Making me want to like buy and flip things now. Like, yeah, it doesn't even have to be drums. Like, I need to flip something.
Well, people do that. I mean, people flip houses and people flip drums. And a lot of time, we have customers that come in all the time. They're just like, you know, they just get a cheap kit, come in, get parts, doctor it up and flip it.
Well, I hope I'm sure this will translate. The people that are listening and, you know, customers that shop here every week, every month that don't fully understand. And we'll get to like the, you know, the business kind of how it was and how it is in the future too. I want to talk about, but it's so much work behind the scenes that goes into, especially as a builder, you're not just selling drums that are already made necessarily, but I just hope people have that respect and understanding. It's like, they're coming in and they're buying a towel or a new snare drum and it's like easy peasy, but the amount of work that you've put into this business.
I mean, we're heading towards 30 years, which is just nuts. At some point, a thing that we're describing here can take over. It becomes its own like sort of being, this monster that will roll you over or chew you up. Because then it's like, you got to know, like you've created this car and it's like, there's gears to it that you never intended. And somehow it's just like, you know, going off the rails, but it's going, it's forward momentum. That's going to, you know, it's both positive and scary, can be overwhelming for sure.
Well, yeah. Perfect segue. I mean, speaking of that, the wheels. So the move from Jackson to Nashville.
Oh, yeah.
Talk us through that transition.
So the shop in Jackson, like we grew so fast because it was just what I've told you so far. I was just me and a telephone and I quit my job.
And there's no employees. It's just you.
Well, we grew within the span of like maybe 4 years. I say we because it started like I had six to eight guys on staff. I just rented a little warehouse and I had a guy. I had two guys doing telephone. I had a manager and a employee doing telephones. I had two to four guys doing shipping. We had a whole like shipping station thing. I had a guy doing some lightweight custom work in the back, just some basic drilling and stuff like that. And then, you know, 3-4 years in and the phone's ringing and orders are coming in. And it just feels like, you know, you've made it. But I mean, in my experience, a niche business that's starting to do well, that's like quote successful, is probably going to peak. Or if I don't know if you got a peak because it implies that it's the top you're ever going to be, but like you really sort of hit a high point, you know, 4, 5, 6 years in.
Yeah.
And then you can have the tendency as a business owner to go on autopilot. It's like, you know, things are happening and I don't have to make them happen. And, you know, you can sort of step back. And I did a little bit and I, you know, I learned some lessons because, you know, when the thing happens without you and you're the thing that made the thing and, you know, makes the thing go really.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, to me, I learned lessons like you got to show up every day and lead from the trenches and make the things happen. I mean, there's certainly something to be said for, you know, taking things off your plate so that you can grow in other ways and make new things happen and all that. But there is a tendency to like, you know, like you've made it, step away. I actually moved out of town. My business operated without me from a different city. I moved to Nashville when my business was still in Jackson.
Oh, wow.
And I would go back every scary. Like, it was scary, but it was also like, it felt like, whoa, like this thing's rolling and like, okay, I can just let it roll and I'm going to be over here.
Yeah.
You know, I would go back every 2 weeks basically to do payroll.
Wow.
And I would work on the website and curation and new products and all that kind of stuff from Nashville. I moved here with a girlfriend at the time. And then at some point I was like, this is too, like these drives, like 2-3 hour drives back to Jackson. all my world that I'd built is not where I occupy now. You know, it's like I live here, it's there. At some point, I made the decision that like I need to move that here. I need that just to, follow me to Nashville. All the employees at the time, like I gave them options to like, anybody want to move to Nashville and come do this thing here? None of them did. They had families, you know, ties to Jackson. So how am I going to manage that? I've got this operation that's like pretty intensive at that time, web sales and you know, doing drum shows and all kinds of stuff. And I want to pick that up and move all that physical stuff, inventory and space, like everything that was just like the business. And I've got like 8 guys running this, but suddenly I want to remove those 8 guys and it's just me again.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It was a scary point. But I just knew I had to do it and I had to figure out how to do it. We literally, when we moved the shop, had 2 semi-trailers full. Whoa. That's how much space of stuff we had in that warehouse as we made the move. So I rented the space over in Germantown here. I found it was a whole different time of Nashville, but it's now the Barista Parlor coffee shop over there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I was there for a good 10 years, but that space and this space, a few years later, I rented this space to be our wood shop. But I rented that building in Germantown. All the movers got all the stuff in, and I'm sitting in this pretty sizable, like 3,000 square foot building in Germantown. That's like, I'm just surrounded by all my like boxes of business stuff. And like, what? Like, I can't ship an order. I can't find a drum lug. I can't take a phone call and be like, how many of those do we have in stock? I mean, it's just boxes of stuff and me and a warehouse. And I just started putting out, I think I registered like drumjobs.com or something and started putting ads out on that.
Was it drummaker.com?
Drummaker.com is the website.
That's
still our website. And I hand coded that website.
Oh my God, of course.
Like these days, it's like you can spin up a Shopify thing in an afternoon. But like I hand coded and curated that website. And it still to this day runs on my hand coded code from a used Apple Macintosh. In my closet on my Comcast or Xfinity, whatever it's called now.
So Drummaker was launched December 31st, 1999.
Yeah.
New Year's Eve. Yeah, that was Y2K, right?
Exactly. So do you know the Y2K thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So everybody was like, the world's going to end. You know, ATMs won't work. And I'm about to launch e-commerce for the first time. So we started in 95. 5 years later, we've hit a plateau and I got to get an e-commerce thing going. You know, because the phone's ringing too much. You need that website to take those orders for you. And that was the thing. Yeah, I mean, it was to stay at that level. Right. Also around that 4, 5, 6 year mark, that's when things get challenging because others will see and be inspired by what you're doing and they want a piece of it.
Yes.
And they want to copy that. And that's great. Like, you know, everything is built on being inspired by something else.
Right.
But when this is your livelihood and then suddenly somebody else is like, I want to take a chunk of your livelihood from you. They're not thinking that. They're just like, I want that.
That's how it feels.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's competition in business. That's a thing. But you start to learn that lesson about 4, 5, 6 years in, usually, and how to manage that, compete, you know, zig when they zag kind of thing.
Right.
So we launched the web, or I launched the website, flipped it on.
You just taught yourself how to make a website?
Just like anything, yeah.
It's back to that tinkering mindset, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I love coding and that kind of stuff in that format. But I flipped it on. Of course, it was running on a Mac, and Macs didn't have the Y2K bug. That's a PC thing.
Yep.
So everybody else was like, of course, it was a farce anyway.
Yeah,
the world didn't end, as we know.
I actually have a funny story about that. Because my dad, early on, when that first started to be discussed, before it was even, you didn't even see it in the news yet. Of course, my dad being the aforementioned nerd that he is, was like, he was telling me about it. He's like, yeah, they're talking about this thing. They're saying, maybe all the nukes will get launched and no computers will work and all
gas. You can't pump gas.
Yeah, and all these things. Like maybe, and then I mentioned something about it in school, and I remember all my peers were like, "What are you talking about? Like this? What are you? You're saying nonsense."
Their parents weren't as nerdy,
right? Well, then a few months later, they're all talking about it in school. The world's gonna end, and by this point, I'm already like, I've had this conversation. They're like, it's gonna be fine. Nothing's going to happen. Like, you don't know that? Like, all right, I can't even talk to you.
I mean, based on history, I'm pretty sure we're going to be okay.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. We've lasted this long.
Well, there were Y2K stickers on things you would buy that would warnings and stuff. I mean, it was a serious thing. But I just somehow knew, like, my computer is not going to do that.
Right.
Mine's going to be fine. And it's a Mac, and it's fine.
And
it was fine.
A lot of people using Macs will have access to my stuff.
And so it, and it worked.
Just gonna move forward.
And then, you know, that website, it's hard. I mean, I do have plans to migrate that to a modern platform because it's gotten to the point now where I literally don't have applications that still function for me to edit that website. I mean, I have to do it in this weird, horrible, intensive ways just to like change a price on an item on the website.
Oh, man,
So that will get more modernized soon. But we did launch drumsupply.com at a later time. It's a little bit more modern day that things will sort of migrate to that platform at some point. But yeah, so drummaker.com's rolling. I've got a warehouse full of stuff and it's me and I got to figure out I need help doing it. I put out ads. I start doing cattle calls. I had like a template for how I would interview people. And I like, I mean, so many people applied. I mean, people that you wouldn't expect. I mean, there were people part of big music operations in Nashville that somehow thought I was, they must've been unhappy at their corporate music job. Yeah. And they were just like going for anything. There's some kid running drum parts in a warehouse in Germantown with no help. And you want me to come do what? And they would apply and come and interview.
Yeah. Wow.
So I hired,
what did you look for in those?
Oh gosh. I mean, at that time it would be a little bit different than I would now, you know, you learn things, always, but
yeah.
I mean, I was hiring for certain jobs. So I was hiring for shippers. I was hiring for like customer service people and just people that would be good at those things, you know, that were had the mind for those kind of things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and also the other thing was like, this was a big open warehouse. Like I needed to build out the space into like some offices for phones and like, you know, shelving and stuff. And one of the things I like hired on was like, do you know how to use a hammer? You know, that kind of thing. I was like, show up with your hammer day one. This is cool drum stuff, but like, we got to build this place.
We have work to do.
Yeah. And I'm not hiring a crew or whatever. Like you, I'm going to do it. You're going to help me put up a wall, you know, those kind of things. And on day one, some of the guy, I had two guys quit day one because they were like, oh, I didn't sign up for this. I was like, yeah, you did. But that's fine. Other people will. I got people to help.
Someone else will take your place.
So we.
I'm sure you were glad that those people left
kind of
so early
out.
On. It's like okay, makes that my job a lot easier.
But I had. I think I ended up with like what I discovered too is like the workforce in Nashville compared to the workforce in Jackson. I could get like for three people doing a job in Jackson, one person could do here. There was a different mindset or motivation or something in Nashville. It was just more. I don't know.
Yeah. Probably. I mean, you probably found the younger people moving here even at that point.
But in Jackson, it would be like, you know, I would hire somebody to do shipping and then their girlfriend would call the next day when they don't show up and like, John's in jail. He can't come in today. People are just more with it here.
Yeah.
Interesting.
In comparison. But I got a crew in place and we started rocking and rolling and shipping stuff out. And orders got like, you know, they were like, I don't even know. We probably took like 3 months to build out the space and not an order shipped. But at that time, nobody really complained. You know, every once in a while, it would be a little bit more of like, hey, this has got to go. So let's find the box that the things are in and we get this order out. But like people were patient more so than like today. It's like if something's not like, they don't see tracking and, you know, Amazon's ruined like the 2-day thing, you know, you'll get a bad review or something, you know. But got those guys in place. The shop was off to the races and we were doing that thing and it was here. I could drive over. It was 5 minutes from where I lived to have my operation expanded, upgraded in town. Like I was just, it was awesome.
Man, it's so cool to hear. I mean, having a team surrounding you is so important.
Yeah.
I know this so well working in the industry at Pearl. I mean, it's cliche, but like we really are family and every employee has a purpose from the warehouse to the director of sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. Our interns this summer, you know, like everybody is really like the people really do make a business, you know? And
yeah.
How was that transition for you coming from like, this is your thing and you had so much pride and ownership of it to then having to actually manage people and the emotions?
Yeah. You have to learn that. You really have to learn that. I hired some good managers over time that basically helped me, taught me some stuff, you know, how to sort of give reviews and, you know, correct things and all that. So I just learned, just like you learn anything else. Or I mean, for me, you know, if I'm learning how to make a drum or learning how to code a website or learning how to manage someone, I mean, you make some mistakes and then you learn from them.
Yeah. Live and learn.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the crew in Germantown were great. You know, that transition over time, people in and out. And at some point, it got challenging because I actually had an employee that started stealing.
Oh,
And things started disappearing and Tory Count started to be off, and he was also in charge of taking inventory and capturing inventory, and he was like fixing the numbers, I believe. And it turned out to be that he was maybe in cahoots with another employee. They were basically building drums and selling them on Craigslist, I was funding the operation.
Whoa.
I caught like some UPS labels. They were, you know, that were shipments that I didn't, like those are not linked to an order number.
Yeah,
you know, and stuff like that. So, and they rolled over and were like, yeah, we made some bad decisions and choices. And oh my gosh, that was a hard time, because basically I then like had to, like, I don't like, I just have to like just clean house.
Yeah.
You know? And then I'm back to me again.
And you've just learned how to hire people. Now you have to learn how to fire people.
And this is probably over a span of another 5 years of growth there.
Sure.
So.
Oh gosh.
And so that was not fun. And those guys, as far as I know, don't live in town anymore.
Yeah.
I don't think that they knew that I knew, because I would still get like reference calls for jobs and stuff. And they'd be like, is so-and-so still hire? Like, would you hire them? I'd be like, no, and here's why.
Yeah. Well, you should ask. Yeah.
I don't know.
But, you know, and that's also like, you got to, you know, I don't think anybody was mistreated. I think they just see opportunities. And part of that is that stepping back and not being present, you know, as a business owner. And they just see like, how? Wow, here's stuff. People will pay me for these things. And wait, I didn't have to pay for it. And, you know, I don't know what goes into that. But then, so basically right around that time, back to solo operation. You know, I was like, hands on, I'm doing this stuff again. They come in with a Nashville's starting to grow. My landlord comes in with about an 80% rent increase in 2013. And so it's like suddenly like I have basically no help, still like day-to-day operations to get done. And my rent's about to double. Mm-hmm. For like, it was the start of new Nashville wasn't a term then, but it should have been. It was the origin of
right
that.
There and then, yeah.
And so I had to get out of there, and I had to get out of there fast. And so we already had this building established for our wood shop, which was this whole, if you walked in here in 2013, there would be like sawdust and drum shells and, you know, just wall to wall.
Yeah.
And so I just had to like maintain this rent here and just like make the wood shop smaller and smaller and smaller and use that space, put up a wall, a divider wall. And you see all these walls and stuff in here. Like every wall has been like put up for a reason of like, you know, organizing the space and making something bigger or better or smaller or more efficient. Yeah. So crammed it all in here in 2013, started operations day to day myself. And that's tough to step back in.
At this point in the business, are you doing only local orders? Or are you actually shipping?
No, I'm shipping like from the Germantown shop. We did so much international business.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we would ship to drum parts and drum wraps. I mean, I haven't mentioned, like, I developed a lot of cool drum wraps that didn't exist, like finishes for drums that didn't exist on the planet.
Yeah.
And so that was one of our big sellers, and especially to the, France and Germany and Australia and the UK, we were shipping all over. It was a global thing, and actually kind of undercover locally. Like not a lot of people knew. We didn't put up big signs or anything.
Right.
Yeah. So it was just kind of like this little hole in the wall spot that like, if you know, you know, but then we're sustaining operations based on like just web orders coming in, you know?
This is the National Drummers podcast.
How
were the National Drummers in the community and the scene at that time? You know, in Broadway, obviously, was still a thing, but
people would find us mostly through the website, and they would be like, I need some die cast tubes. You know, I want to upgrade my snare drum or change. I need to fix this thing or this tension rod broke. And they would look up drum parts and they would find Drum Supply and they'd be like surprised. That's like 5 minutes from my house, you know? And then they would come over to this nondescript warehouse and knock on the door. And then eventually that turned into like doing appointments.
Yeah.
So I would just like, you know, people started finding us in word of mouth locally. And we would do like, you know, restorations and wraps and cut downs and edges and stuff for people.
Wow.
And word of mouth started getting around and stuff. And people would just come over all the time and, you know, just come into and we'd lock the door behind them and they would be like, whoa, I didn't know this was here.
That honestly, the privacy of that had to make that feel pretty special for those people.
I always tried to make them feel special. I always felt like I need to clean up, and it was just stuff everywhere. Kind of like there is now, but like it's more organized now. But back then it was just boxes of hoops and, you know, but it had a vibe. It's sort of the vibe of our shop.
Yeah.
In a way.
I feel like, that's also like a drummer paradise. That's like what we want to see. Right.
Right.
Like just like parts and drums everywhere. Just like,
wait a minute. You start putting this thing. I've made drums based on like parts, just getting stacked on top of each other. Like, that looks like a cool drum. And we'll put that together. You know, there'll be a hoop and a snare drum stand, and then like a shell gets put there and a head and, you know, another different hoop. It's like, that looks like a cool piccolo.
Interesting.
But then, so at, probably, you know, as Nashville started to grow, this corner has been.
Is that an example of one right back there? I can't see what
those
is.
No, our buddy Kevin from Creative made those. Those are popcorn snares. They literally have popcorn, unpopped popcorn in there.
Grab one.
Oh,
oh
my God.
Grab one. Yeah. Pull it up. I got to see this. What?
Oh my God. Yeah, the kernels.
Yeah. A literal popcorn snare. For anybody not watching, you're a fool.
That's awesome.
Hilarious and awesome. Oh, come on.
You actually have it upside down. Flip it over. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a level in the bottom because it's got to be level or the popcorns won't pop.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
The joke is it's a quarter teaspoon of canola oil for the autoplay option.
Amazing.
But yeah, stuff like that would evolve. But as the neighborhood has grown, I mean, gosh, when I moved the shop from Germantown into this space, like there was no Mas Tacos or Pharmacy Burger. There was Mr. T's Daycare and just like old neighborhood salons and stuff like that.
I was going to ask you, T's Daycare.
That Mr. T's.
Okay. I was going to say, we need to have a conversation because I need to know all about that.
That was in the pharmacy now. Was Mr. T's Daycare.
Okay.
I never went in there. It was like just painted on the side.
Pharmacy is still one of my favorite spots here.
Yeah.
How did you land on the East Nashville?
I mean, I was starting in Germantown. It's just like where things were affordable. And this place, we had bars on the windows, you know, definitely no signs out. And then Mas Tacos really kind of took things to the next level over here on this corner. They became really known for their food truck. And then they, you know, starts in a food truck. You're going to have an actual restaurant at some point. Everybody knew that Mas Tacos had opened a space over here, and somehow they all came to our building. Because we were just locked up doing appointments, and people, we call them taco knockers.
Taco knockers.
They would just knock and be like, where's we looking for Mas Tacos? And that's why, if you've seen the big mural of the finger, hand, like, it's here.
Yeah.
And we used to have a sign that was, I drew an arrow, tacos that way, to keep people from bugging us.
That's amazing.
But that stuff sort of took things to of the neighborhood to the next level, and like lots more cars and traffic and all that. And at some point I'm just like, if I'm ever going to open a retail shop, because people are coming in and wanting stuff and wanting our services and wanting to, you know, we're one of the early suppliers of like snare weights and things like that. And I started to really have a lot of fun curating accessories that you don't find or see anywhere. We've got so many accessories that are exclusives or only, you know, you only see on Instagram from like Germany or whatever.
Yeah. That's my favorite thing about supply. I mean, it really is like a toy store. You know, like I come in and just, what can I?
Well, even when we were doing appointments, people would come in and get like Roots EQ mutes and those like bandana overlays and snare weights and stuff like that. And we would demo those at drum shows. We would always do the Chicago Drum Show, which was the big one. Nashville's really coming up. Yeah. And we don't even do Chicago anymore. Nashville is just like enough of a drum show that it's in our backyard. Like it's just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shout out to Landon.
Yeah.
Music City Drum Show.
It's coming up. By the time this comes out, it will be done. But
yeah, right. Yep.
But so not only people coming in for appointments for services, but, you know, starting to notice like the curation of fun things that I'm selling on the website, and they're like, go to Andy for snare weights or whatever. And it starts to become a little bit more of like an organically evolving, like retail kind of operation. But like, I didn't have the budget to like, you know, invest in an account with Pearl or whatever. And plus those brands and things, the big brands are locked up in large part. I mean, many have started to open up to us now, but, you know, and it's just by appointment. We can't even say we're a drum shop. I mean, we're a building where things happen that you have to make an appointment and know somebody. It's kind of like a secret drum club or something, you know? But I remember like, Revival Drum Shop in Portland.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're one of the first like sort of scrappy, really vintage based drum shops, to sort of come on the scene that were just not so corporate, you know? And I took a lot of inspiration from that. And I remember calling a meeting with Jose, the owner of Revival, in like 2016. He was going to be at the Chicago Drum Show. And we did a little walk and talk around the show in 2016 and talked about like, I want to open a shop, you know, and how like he was. And he really emphasized that time, you know, the crew around you is a big thing, or it's super important. And then I met Scott from Tackle that does all the, you know, the leather and canvas stick bags and stuff like that. Who he actually stemmed out of Revival as well. Jose and Scott started Revival together. And then they sort of started doing their own things. But A&F drums were coming on the scene at that time. You know, I met Rami at that show and he was like, we want to buy, you know, flip off strainers from you. and he still does here and there, but, you know, boutique drums started to be a real thing. And I just decided at some point, like we just took the leap and we're just like going to figure out a way to open, you know, and you partner and you do things and you get, you know, you do your thing and get it all in here and then flip the light on and put a sign out and
open for business.
Yeah. Yeah. And then slowly and slowly, and it's really a word of mouth thing, you know?
Yeah.
People are so just like, oh yeah, you're the best kept secret in Nashville. Like, I don't want to be
the best kept
That doesn't
secret.
Keep us here.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's not, the secret's not paying the rent, right?
Yeah, it does, that exclusivity feels fun for the people who are visiting, but that's the opposite of what you want for yourself.
Well, the version of that happens now is like if Evan or Eric or any of the guys, are running the shop and I'm running around doing stuff and making stuff happen and coming up with new stuff and all that. You know, some old customer, he's like, hey, can I meet you? And I'll still do those appointments. I'll still meet somebody at the shop at 2 o'clock to be like, you know, hands-on helpful.
Yeah.
Or hand deliver things all over town. I mean, I did a lot of that during COVID for sure.
Yeah.
That was a big turning point, of course. And everybody's just like, you got to close? Like, how do you, I didn't know. I started taking, I had a surplus of 12-inch Tom cases. Mm-hmm. And I started just piling all the accessories into 12-inch Tom cases to my garage. I was like, I'm just going to have to ship stuff from my mailbox.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I'm going to survive this, I guess. Who knows?
Wow.
I didn't know if I could even be allowed to drive 5 minutes and come in my shop and work, you know?
Yeah.
Turned out to be that you could. So I did all that like panic grab and take home and try to stay alive for nothing really. But we got through that. In fact, we made these little tambo snares. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen those with the little, there's a stack of them here.
Yeah.
So those, we sold like 150 of those during COVID Christmas.
Wow.
And we're still doing those. They're made by Dixon. So we still have an exclusive on those made overseas. Through the end of next year or so. We've got some exclusive colors coming on those, but basically those got us through COVID Christmas.
Wow.
We did some viral stuff online and did some giveaways and things, and those tambo snares basically paid the rent during COVID.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I love hearing your inspiration for the drum shop of kind of being less corporate. And I think having that personal people to put a face to the business is important. You know, because we've all been to guitar centers and, you know, I'm not knocking them, but definitely is a different experience. You know, you walk in, you're greeted by, you know, corporate salesmen that have their objectives. And
I love it when people walk in and I'm like, hey, John, you know,
yeah,
that's a good feeling. It's like a neighborhood kind of vibe.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, especially being in East Nashville is a big part of that. But you walk into Drum Supply and it's just, you say hey to Andy or say hey to the other, you know, whoever else is working here. And
well, that's the thing.
It really
guys,
does feel homey and I can talk to you about the products. You know, you're not trying to sell me on just the most expensive.
Well, I mean, when we have a new product in here, one thing that's a selling point for us to a vendor is like, you know, Forks and Crate, and we work with those guys a lot in a lot of ways. But if there's something like in plastic behind the counter, or bass drum beater or whatever, like, you know, we're going to rip those things out of the package.
Right.
And you're going to get hands on and you're going to try them and you're going to get more of a focus here as a new product.
Yeah.
Just by comparison to any other shop where, you know, we're smaller, like you can't help but be like smacked in the face by the new thing that's on the counter. You know?
Well, and I love that you called it because he gave me the tour before we got going here, calling it the beater garden.
The beater garden.
Great.
Yeah.
just
sometimes people are like, I'll take this one. And I'm like, yes. They're expecting me to pull out one in a package. Like, no, that's the one.
Yeah, there you go. Cool.
It's there for you to try and buy.
So how long has the shop now been in East Nashville?
I've rented this building for 20 years. Mm-hmm. Part of that time was the wood shop and then overlapped with when we had to cram in from, I don't know, German, if you're excluding the time in Germantown, you know, probably 15 years.
Wow.
Something like that. But we're heading towards 30, which is just nuts.
Amazing.
Just nuts.
So you've seen, forget owning a business, but like even just being a resident here. I mean, I've been in Nashville. I've lived in East Nashville since 2021.
Yeah.
I've seen new condos getting built, you know, it seems like every month. I've seen houses
crazy.
Get, you know.
I get a flat tire every month
from
all the construction.
Yeah, sure. So how has that change been as a small business owner, as a resident you've seen, and how supportive has specifically the East Nashville community been with, you know, pharmacy now up and Mas Tacos and all the other restaurants?
I mean, we do get some tourist traffic, which is great. Yeah. And they'll come in and they'll spend a lot of time in their percussion room, and they love shakers and tambourines, and often buy we sell so many hats, you know, and t-shirts and stuff like that. So that's part of the business model in this location to keep us alive. And it's great, that touristy thing. But, you know, it's the locals that I like seeing. When the Broadway drummers come in to grab the sticks or whatever, you know, you get to know the model that they like or whatever. And you're like, dang, we're out of these, but try these, you know. Yeah. But no, I mean, everybody's super supportive. I mean, as far as living in the neighborhood and the change and stuff, there's definitely some negative vibe for me, just the change. Yeah. I mean, the mom and pops shops like ours will be displaced. Yeah. Like, money will win at some point in this. I mean, my building owner has been offered $3.5 million 4 years ago. This would be an $8 million corner now.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Thankfully, we have a 2-decade-long relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got incredible rent here. We're still way below market. It's going up.
Yeah.
But we're still like at no pace. I mean, just to find a new space. And I mean, I have to keep that on my radar all the time, all the time. So I know like what spaces, what you get and what you pay for them around here. Some are like profit taking now. Like it's like, you know, $55 a square foot and we want 3% of your gross profit.
Oh, man.
You know, every quarter. Just to operate, like that's not sustainable. Yeah. So mom and pops don't live in that.
I mean, that continues to always be the kind of negative, kind of the shadow of this town, right? I mean, just seeing our friends that can't afford to have businesses or just live here, you know, it's just too expensive. Not to get political, but doesn't always seem the government has a small business in mind. You know?
Yeah, I mean, his property tax is a big thing that our landlord cites. When he does talk about raising the rent, it's like, well, we know we can't sign for too many more years because the property, we don't know what the property tax is going to be. And, you know, I mean, if we're not here, we'll be somewhere, you know, hopefully in the neighborhood or not far away always, or as long as, you know, I can control it.
Yeah. Well, just from having this conversation with you, I know you're the kind of guy who would, if this, God forbid, that you weren't able to keep this spot, you would just do it from wherever
we're
you
are. We're scrappy and we'll find a way.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's always on my radar. So always, and on top of that, even if I could stay here for another 10 years, we need more space.
Yeah, you do.
I mean, we are on top of ourselves. We opened the guitar shop over there, which is not something for the Nashville Drummers podcast, but we opened Gear Post, everything else not drums, to make the shop a little bit more sort of sticky for an entire band.
So when you string players come in here and you're like, oh, you guys want to, you playing with your drums? You just go in your little corner.
There's a glass door.
Pedals and there's like string things.
It's almost like a little trap for the guitar players. Yeah. It's like, you go there, close the door. Now I can stay for an hour as the drummer.
And you guys got a pretty good selection of audio equipment as well.
Yeah, right? I started getting more into that stuff during COVID too. Really trying to diversify. Yeah. It's another tactic during COVID. Just to, you know, we opened up with like Roland and Yamaha, and I think Pearl was actually doing. We sold so many of your compact traveler drum kits.
Yep.
Our rep was like, you need a trophy.
Shout out to Kyle Loggins over at Pearl. Doing good work.
As soon as like people's kits were like locked away on tour buses and mid tour, or they were holed up in a cabin and they just wanted to play.
Yeah.
And just those little fold up kits. Yep. I shipped so many of those. I would keep two in my car at all times because I'd just be dropping one off here and there and there, or selling them on Reverb or whatever.
Yeah.
It's those kind of things. You know, you need to just pivot and do what you have to do. And if we lost this space, the same kind of thing, you know? But I just want to get to the point now where, like, I could, like, pick up my business and move 20 years ago, you know, in a more digestible way. But, like, now I don't, like, I need 4 months to move just to even think about moving, you know.
Yeah, just to move these snare drums
just
behind
this wall.
Yeah,
over here.
Take a few weeks, yeah. Well.
But, you know, keep coming in and, you know, discovering the shop and supporting the shop and asking for stuff, and I'll find it and we'll keep it as a regular item for you and, you know, be here for you and just keep being here for us. And, you know, we'll be here tomorrow.
I love it. Amazing. Yeah.
That's great.
We kind of covered the past, and I guess we're now caught up to present day Drum Supply, as people
future?
Know it.
Future? Who knows?
Yeah, what's the future? I mean, we've even Drum Supply rehearsals, the future. I mean,
yeah.
I just love hearing you as a quintessential entrepreneur business.
Oh, man.
I mean, you're saying all the right things as, you know, diversification, knowing when to pivot, you know, zigging when they zag.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what's next. Yeah. I mean, I would like to stay in the neighborhood, get more square footage, develop a lesson program. You know, we've got teachers chomping at the bit that want to, you know, teach in the shop. We could do that. I'm going to try that model at rehearsal and see what happens there. I don't know how the calendar is going to play with that, you know, because I guess less teachers like need a repeating, you know, every Tuesday is somebody's lesson or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have to figure that out with the calendar. And we may do that for now, but I would love to have in-house lessons at some point. We need to expand like our shipping operation, which is what everything is built on. Like if you saw me doing shipping back here, it's so like I have to move three things to touch one thing, you know, I need a shipping department, a space for that, whether that's offsite, but then like you're shuttling back and forth inventory to, from one spot to the next. I don't know. It's like, if I put all the parts in a shipping warehouse, not here, then I still need parts here to service, you know, walk-ins and stuff. So there's challenges with that, but just a bigger space in the neighborhood that's affordable. That's the challenge.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Things are things you never know. What we'll see. I mean, before the drummer stool, I had no idea that I'd be sitting here saying like today, like how it's like I just saw you. And it was that a month or two ago.
Yeah.
And suddenly like we're partnering with them and this is a thing.
you move quickly on that.
I mean, the next thing could be impressive. What's going to happen tomorrow? I don't know. But something awesome could happen.
But I love that you have the radar. Like you're not just, like you said, you're not just in your way. Oh, we've got a good business. It's working. So I'm going to just shut off new ideas or possibilities.
When it's like, I mean, that's part that I love, that growth and that model. If I could just like direct somebody's business to grow in fun ways and not have to actually do the work. I mean, that would be a fun job.
Wow.
That's probably somebody's job. I guess consulting like Mark was talking about.
Yeah. So same. Yeah. I know a few people who would hit you up for that.
Well, hey, call me.
You mentioned working with forks. How special is it having, you know, not one, not two, but three, maybe more drum shops here in Nashville and then community?
Yeah. I mean, you know, just a whole different thing. For example, Forks is like, you know, they've got the budget to keep those, you know, every zildjian cymbal made.
Yeah.
And, you know, I might be like, let's get some 5K suites this month, you know, whatever, and whatever people ask for. But, you know, that's great because sometimes, you know, people just want to come in and support us. And if we don't have the thing, I will go find the thing. I'll basically concierge service, go over to Forks behind the scenes and get you the thing that you need and meet you tomorrow at 2:00. And here's your thing.
Yeah.
Thanks for supporting.
So you guys are actively working together in that way.
Yeah. And you know, they'll send people over. Joe will call me. You got this drum head or whatever. We just sold out and back and forth that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's awesome. There was another guy who was a tech who was, I think he was trying to do some sort of drum shop over off of, off of Dickerson somewhere, but I haven't heard much about that. But
Is that FDS?
No, he's doing a thing, but he's more of a tech thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think he has
He sends people over for like drum wraps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's like killing it with custom drum heads.
He really is.
Yeah.
That's
his
thing.
Dude, he's a beast. Finch is a beast. I love that guy.
Yeah. He's intense.
Yeah.
I remember that one. He's like, if you're making coffee or fixing drums. Yeah, he's, you know, and it's fun to see people like that, that like just not pop out of nowhere, but like seem to show up on the Nashville drummer's radar, you know, suddenly, and they're doing a thing and like, what's he going to do next? You know?
Yeah.
How cool has it been for you to see, because I mean, you're literally seeing all these drummers moving here, coming into the shop day after day. Kind of keeps you current, right? With the trends and what people
are
playing.
I mean, I'm so out of the loop with artists. I mean, people are like, I'm playing for some. I'm like, awesome. I don't know who you're talking about. I do sometimes. Like, I'll look up, like, I'll see a name on a credit card, or like purchase or something. I mean, after they go, I'll find their Instagram and be like, hey, follow.
Wow.
I mean, it's tour season right now, I guess. I mean, it seems to be. I'm a little bit out of the loop of actual timing, but like, I can tell that it's tour season because like everybody needs stuff fast.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know,
it's always an emergency.
Yeah. Like, just in the last week, I think I was starting to tell you, Dan, yesterday, like, I think it was like Chris Stapleton's drummer needed die-cast hoops. Slipknot's guy needed something. Striper, which is the 80s Christian group, they needed like two 24-inch matching drum heads that had to be cleared, delivered to the tour bus at Soundcheck today. It was like one after the other. Like that throne you're sitting on, I think, is going to Elvis Costello's crew tomorrow. It's like last minute, just like boom, boom, boom. And that's, I try to be there to take care of that stuff, have the stuff, or quickly jump and get the stuff, you know, and then get it to you quickly. And it's easy checkout and you're taken care of.
I love hearing, like, it seems like customer service is paramount and it always has been.
It is. You can, I mean, sometimes you can let that slip and it's like, it's not intentional ever, but
it's
like,
it's super important. I mean, for even the big brands like Pearl, I mean, the reason artists come to us is because of that personal relationship and we take care of the artists.
I mean, it kills me when emails get buried or text or whatever. And it's like, I just, you know, it's just, oh yes, we're on this thing. And then your message is gone in 30 minutes. I'm like, oh, 3 days later, what was that guy, you know?
And so, and even when it's just a simple misstep and like, oh, well, we just got missed. Sorry about that. Like sometimes people will take that really personally.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Like, man, I mean, almost certainly it wasn't personal, but the fact that you are so on it, that's huge. And actually it kind of behooves you to have the setup that you do. It does feel so homey when people come in, they're like, well, it just kind of feels like
we usually have some jazz playing, or it's like, it's been 80s week this week, been doing some 80s Pandora stations. It's a certain vibe.
Yeah. You have that direct connection with the customer. That's going to be like, there's no beating that.
And then brand support. I mean, Pearl was one of the first sort of bigger name brands. I think Meinl got behind us pretty early on as well. KHS, Sonar, and Mapex, they were just, saw what we're doing and wanted to be involved. Yeah. And that's such a challenge. That when we first opened retail, that was a big challenge, just not having access to like brands that people want,
right?
You know, because they're respectfully locked up by a, you know, another shop, territory-wise or whatever. Yeah. And that's one reason that really lifted up our custom drums that we make, our Hello drums, is that, you know, like I need some good drums in the shop to sell. I mean, we've got a lot of options today, but when we were first opening retail, like, I mean, hey, we can't get them. We can make them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Another, imagine another that. Pivot. Yeah.
Just, we had, I owned bestdrumco.com. I just have a stockpile of domain names basically. So I just put that on the first ones and it was kind of a little experiment. People didn't realize or have any reason to know it, but it was a throwback to Pete Best.
Oh yeah,
the original drummer from the Beatles. Yeah. The forgotten guy that helped them get off the ground in his way, and that's a lot of, I kind of relate that back to the shop in a lot of ways. We're kind of like that best kept secret kind of thing. Like if you know him, you know. Oh yeah, but like people would see on the tag Best Drumco and be like, I would literally see people go like, Best? I never heard of this. They think they're the best, you know? And so I pivoted from that, and actually, do you know Evan Hutchings?
Yes.
So he's a monster studio guy here in town and a great friend of the shop. He got some of our early drums before. So I took the Best branding off, just blank label, some snare drums and stuff. He got one of our early snares and he like got it on a Monday. And by Friday, he was like texting me, Andy, this is such a drum. I've used it on 5 records this week. And he was like, it's a hell of a drum. And that sort of in my mind clicked and it turned into hell of a drum, hello drum. But
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The origins.
That's and so it's cool. Kind of fun. Also, it's like if you see just hello on a drum or on a thing, it's like,
greeting me.
It's saying hello to you. Drum. You're also just when you verbalize it, you're saying hello to it in a way.
A little drum.
It's a little bit of a smile. There's a little bit of an Asian MIJ kind of thing going on, made in Japan kind of thing with it. Mm-hmm. The fact that it's hello drum, not hello drums. There's a little bit of a misspeak there and it's by some standard.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's funny you say that. We experienced that with Pearl because it's Pearl Drum. If you go to the website, it's pearldrum.com. I mean, Pearl Drums
they own
forward,
that too.
But it's literally Pearl Drum.
Yeah.
That's on a lot of different materials too. And it's always like, it kind of bothers me, but I mean, you know.
Yeah.
That's like.
Anyway. I don't know. It's like, do you remember Hello Kitty?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
There was a little bit of a Hello Kitty inspiration in Hello Drum, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hello Kitty. Yeah, it's got cuteness to it.
Yeah.
Well, it seems
and it's just fun. It's just a fun project for us.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of the drums I've seen are like, they're pretty bright, colorful.
Sometimes
finishes, right?
When I'm able to get them coated, sometimes I was going to have a bunch of those at the drum show. And now if you've by the time this podcast drops, came to our booth and there's not colorful drums because I've waited too long and like now I can't get them done in time to make the show. So yeah, there's going to be chrome and black and white.
There you go. Can't go wrong with monochrome.
Which are totally fine.
Well, and that sort of evolved too. Like at one of the early drum shows, Chicago drum shows, I was just trying to take our standard copper, brass, aluminum, steel shells and make them more special. So it's like, make this one green and blue and mint green, you know, like fun colors, just the shells for people to make drums from. And then eventually we started making drums from them and then eventually we put branding on them. And it's fun to see trends happen, you know? And like we have a baby blue drum shell at a drum show in like 2018. It's just a shell. And people see it and take photos of it. And then suddenly, like, brands have, you know, that same vibe.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, you're copying our drums. Like, no, you saw that in our booth when it was just a fun thing. You know?
Yeah, you're right.
It's like the putty pad thing.
Yeah. What are some other trends that you've noticed as a drum store owner?
Oh, gosh.
You've been in business for so long now.
East Nashville's a little hipster.
Definitely.
the bigger the symbol, the thinner the symbol.
It's not washy enough.
I keep those and people
need it.
Yeah. It's not a laundromat. I don't know what else. I mean, people always love a good Acrolite or a Superphonic. Those are just mainstays.
Yeah. I think my perspective, I've never seen so many accessories and toys available now, just everywhere.
Well, there's like countless things to put on your head or your cymbal to make it sizzle or rattle or mute. Itself.
There's a lot more mute products now.
Yeah.
I bought some of those.
Yeah. So I actually need a few of those. I need to get a snare weight because I keep using my wallet.
Snare weight.
Oh, yeah. And you need a drum taco. It's a magnet on. There's probably one stuck to a drum around here somewhere, but it's a little beanbag of like shot, metal shot that magnets to the hoop. And it's more of a wallet weight.
Oh.
Snare weights are great for just a little bit less than that.
Yeah.
And they're a little bit more breathable, snare weights are, where they sort of gate.
Yeah, I need somewhere. Yeah, either that or I like the lesser of because the wallet sometimes is a bit much.
Yeah, well, snare weight. There you go.
There you go.
I actually lost my driver's license that way.
Oh no! Oh, out of your wallet.
Yep.
Yeah. We've had wallets left on snare drums here for sure.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
It flew out. And oh my God. It was gone.
You're like a little less muffling. License out.
Yeah, my driver's license and my HSA card. I was like, oh, man. Oh,
two worst things to lose.
I know. It's really a terrible situation. And right before I had to fly to Hawaii, too, Michelle was so happy. Like, okay, we're going to expedite another ID for you, and I'm going to kill you. Like, fair enough.
So let me ask you guys this. What are drum shops lacking?
Good question.
I don't know if that's a service or an item. I mean, you're probably not going to think of an item because there's so many items. But
what are drum shops lacking? I mean, we're at an interesting point where, especially when you talk about clinics, mm-hmm. I come from like the PASIC. I used to work for Percussive Art Society and like going to drum clinics and stuff growing up. And that return to in-person, I don't think videos and social media will ever replace. That comes up a lot in our podcast. You know, the first clinics that you've seen or who has inspired you and, mm-hmm. you know, just more clinics happening at drum shops. And
I came up in the time of clinics going to see John Robinson and Dom Famularo and all those guys.
Yeah, and I feel like that's where the neighborhood drum shop, that's where those businesses kind of built the community was around the clinics, you know.
I want to do workshops. I want to do some like make your own snare drum workshops.
I would be there in a heartbeat. So fast.
That kind of thing. I mean, we do DIY kits all the time. It's a big part of our model. It's kind of like the tip end of the wedge. What is that? Is that the same? The tip end of the sword? It helps one click start to make drums when you don't have to. It's like, here's a box that has everything you need to make this snare drum.
Right.
You know? But then some people are like, all you need is like a screwdriver to put together. But some people just want to do that in a communal setting. We'll have people in. Just yesterday, we had a friend making a snare drum on the bench over there, which like, just come in, buying the snare kit. If you're able, if you have time, come do it on our bench and we'll use our tools. But if we could do that in a small group setting.
Yeah.
Maybe over at the rehearsal space.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. A thing. And basically the price of the DIY kit is the price to, you know, come to the clinic.
Hmm.
That would be incredible.
My girlfriend owns a bookstore down the way and like she'll have like signings with authors and like the ticket price is the purchase of the book, you know, so it's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's great. That could be fun. I don't have the space to do clinics in here, but maybe sometime in a future shop. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's kind of a, I don't know. Other guys do that and they do that well. It's not really our thing. So I don't know.
That's a good point. I mean, just knowing when to not be everything to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, especially like I, you know, Drum Supply, I come here definitely for things. I've gone to Forks and Nelson and it's cool that those stores can exist and each serve a need for drummers in a different way.
I don't know. What else do we need? I don't know.
I like your answer, Dan. That's I mean,
it's,
like
so you're circling back to community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Well, it's always, what is any shop missing? It's usually community. And if you're able to do something like build your own snare in a communal set, like I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah. That'd be fun. I've always thought that in the back of my mind.
That'd be really cool.
It's on my list.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do, you know, three guys on a Saturday, you know, that in this space, we could do that.
Yeah.
Well, we could strike this kit like we did today and put it right here, but.
Right.
Yeah, we'll sponsor it. It'd be great.
Hey, yeah. Hey.
Beautiful. It's been so awesome, man, just hearing. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I had no idea, like, the longevity and the history and, like, all these different areas and challenges that you had to go through to get to the shop that it is today. It's
Thanks
pretty inspiring
coming.
To hear. And it's just the beginning, you know, Drum Supply rehearsal, to bring it full circle. That's how we started, right? Like, it seems so fitting that Drum Supply would be the ones to open that rehearsal space because, like, Drum Supply is always kind of there for drummers with accessories and solutions and things are broken.
I feel like our customers is, like, the working drummer.
Exactly, yeah, the scrappy, know? Like, just...
The working drummer and the drummer that just wants to just, like, dive into his gear, you know, in ways that, you know, you don't necessarily... Like, more of a techie kind of mind.
Yeah, yeah. So the Drum Supply rehearsal is just, like, another outlet for that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's gone from... toys, accessories, and products to now this whole new exciting service.
Yeah.
Physical space. So we're stoked to see where that's going to take you.
Me too.
Want to do a few wrap up closing quick questions?
Yeah, this should be fun.
Yeah. I didn't prepare for these.
That's the beauty. You can't.
Yeah. Well, the best part is we don't either.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Hit me.
What are you drinking?
Oh gosh. Black tea.
Black tea. Is that
iced
usual?
Black tea.
Nice.
There's actually, do you know Living Waters? I saw you over at Living Waters recently.
My favorite,
I live right, have you ever had the cascara?
No, I haven't.
It's a tea, hot or cold, made from the unripened coffee beans. So they're like green or red or whatever.
Yeah.
Made into a tea, a little simple syrup. Try it next time you're there.
Okay.
Hot or cold.
I still have not been to Living Waters. You've talked to me about it several
great
times.
Vibe, yeah.
Yeah. This is
it's like kind of like
brewery
a...
and a coffee spot. Both.
I love that.
They're always open when I need them to be. I mean, they close at some point. They're not 24 hours.
But. Yeah. It's next to Grimy, the record store.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Just good community. They have a bunch of food trucks there now and
live music too.
I think like farmers markets or something on the weekends.
Cool. I don't know.
Yeah. Music. Now. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. So in the summer, tea, cold, iced.
Okay. In the winter, what do you drink?
Usually some form of coffee. I've gone through various stages of coffee. You know, whether that's black, I like it all, black or sugared up.
Yeah.
It all does the job. But I tell you what, the Mas Tacos in a pinch right next door, they're cafe con leche.
Oh.
They dump, what is it? Sweetened condensed milk.
Oh, man.
And they use that, what is that Mexican coffee that, the yellow, it's like this really bold, it's a distinct coffee that's kind of cheap and, you know, pedestrian, but. That with a bunch of condensed milk in there
sounds awesome.
Yeah, it will jack you up.
I need that. I've had a series of long days and I'm so beaten.
If they're over there now, I mean, you should be able to get one before you go back downtown.
Yes,
yeah. I'm definitely getting one after this.
Cafe con leche.
Okay, cafe con leche. I got it.
If you had to choose pharmacy or Mas Tacos,
Mas Tacos.
Okay,
I don't have the patience. I mean, pharmacy is good, but you know. Mas Tacos is like the real deal. And we can overdo it because if you operate next to Mas Tacos from their birth, from the taco knockers stage to Guy Fieri coming in.
Oh my God.
Maybe once a week, maybe twice a week. We had it last night.
Yeah.
And it's, for me, it's the fried avocado taco, the fish taco, which is like almost like a fish sandwich. I mean, it's a filet of fish on there. We take the onions off. These days, add more cilantro. The street corn, cut off the cob, is our way.
Let's go.
And the tortilla soup.
Beautiful.
And the cactus tacos on Wednesdays. I think it is. Cactus and chorizo. It's a special one day special.
Any other favorite spots? Food-wise? East or outside of East?
Nicoletta's, Italian pasta.
Love, yeah. Pizza.
Yeah.
You asked the question earlier, what do you think drum shops are missing? What would you like to see? Obviously you want to see your own business succeed, but what do you want to see drum shops in general do better?
Just stop competing on price, maybe, you know? It's just like you match Sweetwater, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're huge, and that's always, I don't think that's going to go away. That Goliath of an online.
They're only getting bigger.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I heard one of our good friends was out there doing some audio capture for some sort of content for Gibson, I think. And I think they have their, you know, the little bags of candy that they put in the orders?
Yep. Yeah.
They're, and you may know this, but I think their candy building is bigger than our shop.
Oh my God. No kidding.
Yeah. It's just operations of just candy.
It's so irritating.
So to me, that's just like, that's driving out the little guys.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, like they are literally selling, like some Remo heads will come up below our cost and people expect us to basically lose money on this item, you know? And there's no like enforced map minimum advertised pricing on some of those things. Remo started to put some map pricing on some items, and you know, drum companies do too. But if there's not map enforced, they just take advantage of that sometimes.
Wow.
And that's going to squash the little guys. And why do that?
Yeah.
Sell it for what you should sell it for, you know? Yeah. I don't know. Not retail, but you know, 50 off is typical.
Yeah.
Yeah, so stop competing on price, maybe. I don't know. Just that's a different game. It just takes all the life out of it. It just becomes like pennies, you know.
Well, then you're just in a race to the bottom.
Yeah, and I've done that with drum parts.
Yeah.
You know, there's another website that at some point in time, I don't know if you had a bot set up, but like I would have a tension rod at 42 cents and I would go to 41 and his site would go to 40. It was just like, stop. You're killing it. You're killing us both.
Yeah.
You know?
You've encountered and done business with a lot of celebrity drummers and people that have gone on to do cool tours and gigs and whatnot.
Yeah.
Is there a certain, maybe a custom drum that you've built for someone?
Somebody
that stands out is like, that was a really cool
necessarily
project.
Custom drums. So much of our stuff, like, you know, like I was saying, like drum wraps and things like that. Like right before COVID, we did a special drum wrap that was shipped to DW. Okay. For Chad Smith's Chili Pepper tour.
Yeah.
It was like this pink diamond pearl situation that his tech requested samples. I pulled out the top, you know, pinks that I liked. And then we produced this custom. It took like 8 weeks to make it. And that comes out on a DW kit that's on stage with, you know, Chad Smith and the Chili Peppers. And nobody knows that I formulated that pink and made it happen and got it to the place in the right time. Stuff like that.
That's so cool.
It's like nobody will ever know that unless I wave a flag.
And, yeah.
Right.
And you're not in it for the name recognition or the credit. Yeah.
But we usually have some like sort of scrap pieces left over from production or something and we'll make a cool drum about from it. And, you know, and it's always on the top shelf and people are like, that one's cool. And I could be like, we made that for, you know, that finish for whatever. Stuff like that. It's just fun to see, It's kind of fun doing stuff like that from behind the, you know, the corner in a way.
Yeah.
Might defeat the purpose if you do want to keep that kind of thing private, though. Honestly, I would be interested to see content if you were in a situation where you get to make an interesting drum for someone doing something like that. Like, video of it.
Did some stuff on it, but then it's like a 24-hour news cycle kind of thing, and it's gone. But if you scroll back, you can probably find a picture of that on our Instagram page.
Yeah. Speaking of, just quick, this could be a whole episode, but social media.
Yeah.
You literally built a website before there was even internet. How has that transition been to have to compete?
It's taxing. And now there's like, I don't know, Threads just popped out. Exactly, we were like, I don't know, we were early on Threads. Have you got on there?
Yeah.
It's like Twitter.
We have an account with the podcast. Yeah. I don't I haven't figured out how I'm going to use it yet for...
I think it could be a fun thing to just be like, you know, hey, you post this thing on Instagram, a drum or a situation, and then you start a conversation about it in a different way over on Threads.
I mean, if it's a less toxic Twitter, that's...
Yeah.
I think that's all they're trying to go
after. We'll see, but it's like, you know, another one, and like we tried it. I've got a TikTok thing too, and it's like I've got three videos on there, and it's like...
Yeah.
It's like Instagram's enough, but like their algorithm just kills us, and like, you know, we don't get views, and you know, you got to pay to advertise just to think that during COVID we lost our Instagram and people thought we were out of business.
Huh.
It was just like, suddenly I tried to log in and it was like, your account's been deactivated, blah, blah, blah.
Oh man.
I had to fight tooth and nail that you can't call Instagram.
No. Oh, it's insane. Yeah.
And good luck. Oh gosh. I mean, I don't know if somebody was like false flag reporting, you know, whatever, to like take it down. I don't know if it's a bot. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we lost it for about almost a month, 3 to 4 weeks. And people thought we're out of business just simply because they were like Drum Supply and it's not there on Instagram.
Right.
Like I'm here shipping, doing, it's surviving.
Yeah.
Like Instagram doesn't mean a business is alive or not, you know?
Right. But that just goes to show you though, that's how these kids think now. I mean, we're on their phone.
It's could have started another one, but there's no way. I mean, we're close to 40,000 followers at that point. But ever since that time, they've put a finger on us and we can't, like, we'll gain 3 and lose 4. It's just like, it's an exposure thing.
Yeah.
The day it was, I'll never forget it. It was during a thunderstorm, like a power outage. The power was out. Our internet was out. It's raining.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to log back in because I had sent so many forms. I was obsessively trying to just like log in.
Yeah.
With proper credentials, log into my own Instagram. And our internet was bad, so I had to get 5G. I had to step out in the rain, walk down the street, try to log in. Oh, it's going through. It's like, it's not going through. Is it the internet? Is it them? Am I still blocked? And it finally like popped back on. And I did a post. I was like, we're back.
Oh my gosh. Damn, man. Sorry you had to go through that.
Even though I knew you got it back, I was still like, oh my God.
And with that in mind, how would you like people to look you up and contact you?
Oh gosh, that would be drumsupply.com. Drum Supply on all the social, pretty much. Yeah, Drum Supply on all the social. 1-800-NEW-DRUM.
Still functional.
Still hits us. Yep. I don't know if you can text that one, but you can text the number. That's another differentiator for our shop. Like, we text customers all the time. People would be like, do you have this head? And I'm just texting, you know.
That's great. Yeah. That personal mom and pop community relationship, I think, is so important.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if we have any discount codes. We do have a local rewards program that you can enter in the kiosk over here and get like punches, and you get buy one, get one on a 14-inch ambassador or whatever next time.
Yeah.
You can text to join that as a local. It's no sense in doing it remotely if you live in Indiana, because we're going to be sending you promotional text about a practice pad that you need to come get in the shop today. But we'll have a sidewalk sale and you'll get a text that morning, that kind of thing. You can sign up for that.
Great.
Love it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Amazing. Check out drumsupply.com. Check out Drum Supply Rehearsal. Andy, you've just been killing it here and for so long. Just like, really, I mean, thank you on behalf of drummers everywhere, right?
Oh,
just
man.
Supplying and serving the needs of drummers. It's been really cool to follow your journey and learn more about you today.
Yeah. So.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, y'all.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast. If you've enjoyed these podcasts, please consider supporting us on Patreon. For $5 a month, you can help support this dream and keep the ball rolling for us. Believe it or not, it's not free or even necessarily cheap for us to make this thing go. To sign up, go to patreon.com/Nashville Drummers Podcast or click the link in our Instagram bio. All of your help is greatly appreciated.
Check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.